Good evening, and thank you so much for being here. I'm humbled every time I'm asked to speak in front of a group, to be able to present the Word of God, to talk about things that are of utmost importance. This congregation especially has always been like a second family to me. It's through the years we've had great relationships. Josh has always been a good friend. We've sat on a couple of different panels of lectureships together, and as he said, he's already test-driven some of these sermons, so if there's anything you don't like, blame him, because he's already heard it once, wanted to hear it again. But I thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you and to spend time with you this weekend. There was a call that came out over the radio of an air dispatch in northern Alaska. And as a call came out for Mayday, a pilot beckoned into the air traffic controller and said that because of the fierce winds, that the plane may not make its 150-mile journey. A 150-mile journey is not a long flight, but see, on a twin-engine plane, when facing fierce headwinds, it ended up being too much. The fuel that they had on board, the supplies, the resources that they had planned for the day turned out not to be enough. As the air traffic controller heard the tail number of the plane, he realized that among the four passengers on the plane, two adults and two children, that one of the children was his own daughter coming back home. As he scrambled to give advice, to give direction, to provide some resources to the pilot as he was panicking, turned out to be too little and too late. The plane went down in the glacial waters. And as the rescue copters came, as the divers went out, the plane was lost. For some unknown reason, the pilot, before he took off for his 150-mile journey that he had made over 100 times just that year, failed to take account of all the resources that were at his disposal. There wasn't enough fuel on the plane. The fierce headwinds gobbled up what normal fuel it would have taken. And the weather pattern was too much for him to navigate. Now, as he sat there waiting to take off, with the flight plan, with the itinerary, with his own knowledge and training as a pilot, he failed to look at the resources, to examine the resources for the job that was in front of him. Maybe he didn't even read the weather report. Pilot's training tell you to read the weather report before you take off. He didn't take into account that a normal load of fuel wasn't good enough because the drag that's created in fierce headwinds. You need more fuel. It burns faster. You don't get the same miles to the gallon, if you will. Four lives were lost that day. I wonder in life how many lives are needlessly lost for a simple, careless judge of the resources available. Not only physically, but spiritually. How many lives are lost to sin because we don't examine the things that God has placed within our hands of resources to deal with sin and death and trials that are to come? How many people get lost on the slippery slope of temptation that leads them further and further away from God because they don't know what's available at their hands, or the things that are placed into their hands, the precious resources that they've been entrusted with, they fail to use or utilize to their fullest extent. In the same way that pilot had a mission that day, we have labor as a mission from the Lord. As God created the heavens and the earth, He entrusted us with precious resources to fulfill a task that is great, that is awestruck, that is awe-inspiring. And as He placed each of these resources into the hands of Adam and Eve initially, They were passed down from generation to generation to generation and are in our hands today. And we're told, as a mission statement, if you will, to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. That is our direct mission statement. What we're trying to do here, right? And we're trying to accomplish the work of the Lord in our lives because that's, quite frankly, why we're here, isn't it? Why are we on earth? What's the meaning and purpose of life? Why not, as a Christian, once you've come out of the waters of baptism and you're clean for the first time in your life since you were an innocent child, why weren't we raptured right up to heaven? Wouldn't that be easier? Why are we here? What are we doing? And what's so important about this task that God has entrusted us with a great number of resources to accomplish it? In the matter of stewardship, it is very serious business for God. The Scriptures are layered over and over and over again about not only what God provides, but what our responsibility is with those resources that God has placed into our hands. I want us to begin, though, with defining terms. I think terms are important. Yet the word stewardship is one of those words like many of us find, if you still use a King James Version Bible, that over the years has lost its meaning and understanding. When was the last time outside of a Bible class when you're quoting from Scripture that you said, hey, let's look at stewardship? We don't use that word, do we? When was the last time you called for a steward? Can I get the steward here? Right? We don't use that word. It's not part of our vernacular. Here's a word we do use, though. We use a word, fiduciary. Now, what's a fiduciary? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Fiduciary is a person to whom property or power is entrusted for the benefit of another. Here's other words we use that have the same meaning. Power of attorney. Trustee. So what we do as a fiduciary, when you act in a fiduciary capacity for somebody, you're entrusted with their goods, with their possessions, with their things, and you're asked to act on their behalf. Right? So, if you either don't have the capacity or the time or the ability to manage certain affairs, you find a power of attorney. A lot of times parents, as they get older, may entrust their children as their power of attorney, one or more of their children, and say, if I can't sign documents for myself, if I can't make business decisions for myself, I'd like you to take all of my resources and make the best decisions possible for me. And they appoint their children as a power of attorney. Sometimes if the assets are great, if there are several assets or if they're complicated or if there are businesses to run, they may hire an attorney to act in that capacity or hire a bank to act as their trustee as their delegate, and they turn over these powers. What I want us to consider is that the idea of stewardship really boils down to us, as God's children, being His power of attorney. That we are God's fiduciary to act on His behalf in terms of the great mission that we have and the work here on this earth physically. Now, God doesn't have a lack of ability or capacity to do this. It's not why God's entrusting us. But our God has told us through the Scriptures that His focus is spiritual things and providing for His children. And that because of the things that He's involved with of utmost importance, He entrusts us to do and act on His behalf in matters of physical things. That as a fiduciary, we act for God as God's power of attorney according to the things in which God provides each and every one of us. So, as if I were setting up a trust and I was going to have a trustee, there are three primary parties of a trust. There is the grantor of the trust, the one that owns all of the assets, the resources. So the stocks, the bonds, the checking account, the home, the cars, all the possessions that somebody has, they grant that to the trust, or they place that inside the trust. Secondly, there's a trustee, and the trustee's responsibility is to use all of those resources and to act on behalf or in the best interest of the beneficiary, which is our third party. The beneficiary, in this case, as we look at spiritual things, is both God and those of this world, all the children of God's, whether they belong to Him through the blood of Christ or whether they're orphan children and lost because they have not accepted. That is the beneficiary. So we've got our three parties. God is the grantor. And when we look at the possessions that God has placed in the trust, those come in four basic forms that we're going to talk about, Lord willing, this weekend. He entrusts us first with our souls. The eternal peace of man. He gives each and every one of us a soul. And to that soul, to the eternal nature of man, and all of its wonder and beauty and majesty, He entrusts us with it and says, act on behalf of me to the best you can do with this soul that I bless you with. Secondly, God has blessed us with these physical bodies. Some physical bodies are better than others, right? Some are tall, short, skinny, fat. All that stuff, right? God has entrusted each and every one of us with a physical body, and regardless of the current state of your physical body, when we boil down the root contents, it is amazing what our bodies can do. In those physical bodies, we have the brain, the intellect of man, the heart, and compassion, and feelings, and desires, and emotions, and all the things that we can do, that we do to interact with one another. To carry out tasks, to carry out abilities, these amazing bodies. Third, we're entrusted with a portion of goods that God places in our hands and our lives. The important thing to notice about these goods, as we're going to spend more time talking about tonight, these goods are not ours. They're God's, and He places this into our hands, into our lives. To every one of us, He gives a different measure of these goods. A different measure of money, of wealth, of power, of prestige. All of these blessings that God gives according to ability and according to capability. We're going to talk about that in more length. And then finally, He gives each of us a measure of talents. When I talk about talents, I mean our skills and abilities, the things, as many people say, are God-given. Now, a lot of times when we talk about God-given gifts and abilities, it refers to athletes. All right? He's just got a pure swing, a pure jump shot. There's things that He just physically has been blessed with. Well, in the same way that some are blessed athletically, all of us are blessed with a certain level and measure of intellect. And even with that level of intellect or athletic ability or any number of other skills and abilities that we're blessed with, all of them are taken care of differently. You can have somebody that may be the smartest guy in the room, but if he never reads a book, he's never going to progress. He's never going to get any better. An athlete that is gifted physically, and all of us probably have a story of somebody we went to school with, that we grew up with, that was amazingly gifted, but never went to the weight room, never listened to the coaches, and never made it. It didn't make it to college, didn't make it from college to professional ranks or whatever. Our talents that God has blessed us with, that God has entrusted us with, that God has granted us use over, have to be developed. And if we don't develop those talents, then that's another thing that we fail as a steward, as a fiduciary, as a power of attorney to cover. I want to exhibit tonight that there are five main stewardship principles. Now, if you're taking notes, please take this down as we go over these five main stewardship principles, because in these four areas of stewardship that we're going to cover this weekend, all of them will cover the same five stewardship principles. That there are five basic principles that the Scriptures boil out that help us as we examine each of these four areas of stewardship. Now, as we talk about these different things, again, we're going to use these financial terms. We'll talk about trustees, about fiduciaries, about powers of attorney. And I think it's important to look at it in the lens that we use in everyday life, things that we can relate to. As much as some people like to always use Bible terms and say, well, we've got to say Bible things and Bible ways and this and that, and I've heard that rhetoric. Here's the thing. Jesus, in using parables, explained spiritual principles and everyday use that people could understand. That's why he told stories. The kingdom of heaven is like this. He doesn't go into some theological terms to explain all the intricacies of the kingdom of heaven. It's like a man that had a field. And here's what he did with that field. He explained them in ways that they could understand, that they could take in. And I think the same way we need to take these spiritual, scriptural principles into things that we can see, touch, taste, and feel. Otherwise, they're never going to be real to us. And as Josh's point in the introduction, introducing me, he said, this is something that we don't talk about. You know why we don't talk about it? Because we don't understand the words. We don't understand this stuff. And most times when you hear a sermon, any sermon on stewardship, it's not on stewardship. Google it. This is a fun exercise when you go home. Google stewardship. Do you know what comes up? Sermons on giving. That's the only thing they talk about. It's how you can give more and how much you should dig deep in your pocket and give to whatever preacher's up there. And, you know, again, if you have some time, get on there and listen, because some of these guys are hysterical. Not a lot of it's truth, but it's hysterical. Areas of stewardship. So let's look at the first. The first, as we talked about, is God is the grantor of all things. I don't care what the deed to your house says, the title to your car says, the title on your bank account, none of the possessions that you have in life are really yours. Best case scenario, you're borrowing them from God. But I want to tell you that Scripture dictates that God has entrusted them to you for His use, for His benefit, and for His purpose. Whether it's a dollar, $100,000, or $100 million. In Psalm 24, verses 1 and 2, David says it this way. The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof. The world and those who dwell therein, for He has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. God created all of this, right? Go back to Genesis 1. The beginning of all things, in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning was God. And God created the heavens and the earth. Without God, there is no heavens and the earth. Without God, there is no birds of the air, there is no fish of the sea, there is no beast of the field. There is no man without God. We were created by Him and for Him. Make no mistake about that. We didn't come and evolve from tadpoles in these glorious bodies that we're blessed with for no purpose. Matter of fact, we never went through all that stuff. That's garbage. But we're not here for no purpose. We are here specifically for God's purpose, created in His image. In Psalm 50, he says it this way. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. Not for your sacrifices do I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. I will not accept a bull from your house or goats from your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know all the birds of the hills, and all the moves in the field is mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world and its fullness are mine. Get the picture? God says, I really don't need you. I can do all this stuff myself. All of the fullness are mine. It's not that I desire these sacrifices from you. It's not that I need you to feed me or to do these things. I want you to. I'm entrusting you with this power. I'm entrusting you with these possessions to work on my behalf. God, as He grants us these things, is the owner of all of it. The most important principle we need to understand is that all of this is God's. Isn't that what we learn with Job? In the story of Job and how that works out, Satan comes and says, God, this Job here, the only reason he cares about you is because all these possessions. That's all. That's the only reason he cares about you. And God says, nope, that's not how it works. Job loves me. Job trusts me. And I bless Job with things to work because he is righteous and he does things for me. Satan says, nope, if you took the stuff away, Job's out. God says, okay, take it. And he takes the things away from Job. And no matter how much bad advice Job gets from his wife or his terrible friends, as they all come together and they tell these stories, Job says what? Naked I came into the world, naked I'll go out. God blessed me and I used the things. It's gone, but God still is sovereign. Job saw that it was God that was the abundant giver, and that God, as he gave, could also take away, but that doesn't change how Job views God because God is the primary giver. In financial seminars I go to, a lot of times they tell the story from the fables about the goose that laid the golden egg. Everybody remembers that story? Goose lays golden eggs. I wonder sometimes in life why we get misfocused and spend all our time chasing the golden eggs and forget about the goose that laid them. At times in life, we get so wrapped up in the possessions, in the money, in the talents, in the abilities, in the desires, in all of these things that God has blessed us with, that we forget the one who actually gave them. That we get so wrapped up trying to amass all the golden eggs we can, if we just pay attention to the goose that laid them, we would be blessed even more. Remember the story of David and Bathsheba? In 2 Samuel chapter 12, when Nathan comes and rebukes David, and he tells him the story about the little ewe lamb, and that was all that God had entrusted this one man with. And somebody that had an abundant amount of blessings came and took away from that man. And David, his anger was kindled against him, and Nathan said, this is what you did. And the rebuke that he gives him in 2 Samuel chapter 12, God explains to David, he said, all that was in your master's house, and your master's wives, and your master's servants, I gave them to you. And if you wanted more, all you had to do was ask. But you took from the one that I had only entrusted a small amount of blessings with. Get it? God, in his rebuke of David, reminds him that he is the source of all that David has. David realized that as he repented, as he turned back to God, that God truly is the source. And if God is the source and God is the grantor, the other lesson we need to learn here is as much as God abundantly gives, those things can also be taken back away. The one who grants can also pull back. And if we're not careful with how we view these blessings of God, if we're not careful with how we take care of them, they can be gone. And don't we see this on some level anyway? God does things with these blessings that are amazing. He gives us these bodies that are imperfect, that wear out, doesn't he? Why? Wouldn't it be great if we had a body that never wore out, if we were always where we were and maybe at 25 at peak physical condition? No, we get older and our bodies wear out. Why? God does that. He puts an expiration date on the bodies that he blesses us with to teach us that life is temporary and that eternity is forever. He's teaching us through what he gives us. And these bodies, as they wear out, we realize more and more that it's not about me and not about what I can do because I can't do what I used to do. Now, believe it or not, I'm 35. I know I probably look like I'm 50 at this point because my body's breaking down. And I'm not what I was at 30 or what I was at 25 or what I was at 18. I'm on the back nine already. Got here way too quick. But these things wear out, and God grants us these amazing bodies. And he grants us our souls and our goods and our talents. And he gives them all to us according to our needs, according to our abilities, and according to what he believes we can do with that. Secondly, we are trustees, fiduciaries, powers of attorney of God's possessions. We don't really have anything. God has things. Genesis chapter 1, verses 28 and 29. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food. God says, I gave you all these things, and here's what I want you to do with it. Be fruitful, multiply. Go and fill the earth. That was the mission, that was the task of Adam and Eve. Now, we don't have that same mission and task. Our mission and task has changed and different. But when it was just Adam and Eve, their job, their responsibility with what God had entrusted them with was to spread. Was for them to be fruitful, to multiply, to take care of the blessings that God had given them in order that they may fill the earth. Jesus says it similarly in the New Testament. He says, for it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them with his property. Listen very carefully. The kingdom of heaven is like a man that goes on it and he gives them his property. No. Goes on a journey. What does that mean? He's going to come back, right? And when he entrusts them with his property and says, I've given you all these things and here's what you're supposed to do. I'm going to go away and then I'm going to come back. God, in the same way with our lives, entrusts us with these blessings. And he's going to come back for them. But none of them, just as the servants, even though they were using the house and they were using the fields and they were using the trees and they were using all of those resources to take care of the land and to benefit themselves, some because they had to survive. Whose possessions were they? Were any of those servants that were likened to the kingdom of heaven and servants of the kingdom of heaven ever mistakenly thinking that that was theirs? The same thing with us. Take our bodies, for example. If it's my body, as some espouse it to be, I can do whatever I want with my body. If I want to be sexually immoral with my body, it's my body, and I'll do it, and you can't tell me what I need to do with my body. Because it's mine. But it's not. Not my body. It's God's body. God gave it to me to use for a little while. Eventually, He's going to take that body back. And the physical will pass away, and that which is spiritual remains. But this body that God gave me, I don't have a right to be sexually immoral with it. I don't have a right to abuse my body. I don't have a right to do any of those things because it's not my body. It's God's body. I don't have a right to adorn it immodestly. I don't have a right to debase myself because it's not mine. I think about it this way. Growing up, when I still lived at home, I had a car. Dad had a car. My car, like a typical 16, 17-year-old, didn't get the best care taken of it. We'll say that. My car was dirty. It had stuff all over it, sporting equipment, wrappers, papers, junk, garbage. I'm pretty sure at one point there was a raccoon living in the back seat, but he was happy because he was fed. Dad's car wasn't. Dad's car was always clean, always vacuumed out, always neat. And if I had a date and I didn't want to subject them to the nastiness that was my car, I'd borrow Dad's car. And when I took Dad's car, I didn't drive Dad's car like I drove my car. I drive my car at Mach 3 on two wheels around a corner and didn't care. Dad's car, I was scared to death of ever doing anything wrong with it because it wasn't mine. Because he valued it. It cost him a great deal. It was far more valuable than the piece of junk that I was driving. I understood what value it was. I understood who the owner was, and I understood that I was going to have to return it back to him. And if I didn't return it back to him with the same level of gas that was in it when I left, or at the same level of cleanliness or better than when I had it, I understood that I probably wasn't going to be able to have that car anymore. And I understood that there would be consequences for that. You see, when we look at possessions and treat them like they're somebody else's, we treat them differently. We treat them differently because of the owner. Because of whose it is. And because we know we're going to have to return it back to that owner. And we know there will be consequences if we don't take care of it. Thirdly, God supplies to the needs, as the grantor, to the needs of the trustee, the needs of the power of attorney. In a typical trust arrangement, the trustee, the fiduciary, the power of attorney, collects a fee for services. You've got to go to meetings. You've got to write checks. You've got to pay bills. You've got to do a lot of different things. And so the trust will provide an income for you to do those things. If you have traveling expenses, if you've got to fly to Florida to close on a real estate deal, the trust will buy your plane ticket, take care of your food, and make sure that you get back. All of those things are normal part of a trust relationship for the trustee. And some people that have very complicated trusts will hire a financial institution to take care of them, one, because they have expertise, but two, because of the safety of having a financial institution as opposed to an individual. You know, if the individual rips off the trust, you can only go after the individual, and if they don't have anything, you can't get anything. But if a financial institution rips off the trust, you can sue the financial institution and get your money back. And for those services, fees are paid in order for them to be able to execute. God says it the same way in what He's entrusted us with. He said, I've been young and now I'm old, and yet I've not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. God says, I'm going to take care of you. You don't have to worry about bleeding the trust dry or bleeding my assets dry or abusing what I've put in your hands, because I'm going to make sure you're okay. I'm going to make sure you're good and you're whole. But you've got to trust that if you'll follow my prescription, if you'll follow my trust document, my investment policy statement, that everything will come out the way it's supposed to come out. Are you going to have all your wants? Nope, doesn't say that. It'll supply your needs. Everything that you need. And more. Jesus says it this way when he's explaining the same concept in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. Jesus says, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, physical bodies, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Jesus goes on to say in the following verses, God knows every hair on your head. God knows about every sparrow that's in the air. God knows about the grass of the field, and aren't they arrayed even better than Solomon? Jesus says, pay attention. God takes care of what belongs to Him. You're not going to have to worry about that. But what happens? We press, and we get anxious, and we get fearful, and we think, I need to hoard these blessings, or I need to hoard these talents, or I need to hoard these goods, because I got to take care of me, because if I don't take care of me, who's going to take care of me? Right? The adage that the world tells us, you got to look out for number one, because nobody else looks out for number one. If you spend your whole life trying to take care of somebody else, who's going to take care of you? That's the world's wisdom, that's the world's knowledge. But God says that's foolish. If you'll follow my prescription, if you'll follow my plan, you will never, ever be without. I'll make sure you're taken care of. I'll make sure that all of your needs are met. Because if I'll do it for a sparrow, if I'll do it for grass, aren't you a little bit more valuable than grass? Aren't you a little bit more valuable than a sparrow? If we just look at this conceptually, God sent His only Son to die in order to redeem us. Us, me and you. With all of our flaws, with all of our insecurities, with all of our anxieties, with all of our issues, with all of our problems. Did Jesus die for sparrows? Grass? No? No? Us. Who's more valuable? And if God takes care of the little, bitty, seemingly insignificant things, how much more is He going to take care of me and you? How much more, when we're about His business, do we make sure that He's going to take care of us? Used to, in the old days, and I know some of this has changed, that's a sad statement about our society, but it used to be in old days, people got good jobs. You wanted to get a good job. What was a good job? A good job means you worked for a company that took care of their employees, right? You had pensions, you worked for a certain amount of time, and once you've put in your 25 or 30 years or whatever that number was, that company was going to pay you that same salary for the rest of your life. And they would do things like reward you and look out for you and make sure you were taken care of. If your wife got pregnant and you could go home and be with her and help her with the child until you came back to work and you had sick leave and time off and they understood things. If you got hurt on the job, they'd make sure you were taken care of and your job was there for you when you got back. Good companies, good jobs, right? Everybody kind of remembers that. And there were certain companies that had that reputation, right? There was a company in town or nearby where you were that everybody looked at and said, you know what? That company, they take care of their people. Same thing when you work for God. only better. You work for God because God takes care of His. Now, your company, and what we've experienced in the last 15, 20 years, companies don't care about their employees necessarily anymore. Maybe your company does. Most of them I've been involved with don't. And when I wish I had the picture here with me, but there's, you know, those accessory things with the pictures of stuff that's supposed to be motivational, right? There's one that I love that it's a pencil that's all the way used up, and the quote on it's retirement, when we've gotten all we can get out of you, right? That's what most companies are. Whatever we can get out of you till you're used up, till there's no lead left in the pencil, then we're going to throw you out and find somebody else, probably younger and cheaper than you are, right? But when we work for God, when we're about His business, when we're workers in His kingdom, when we understand primarily I don't work for XYZ Corporation, I work for my God, and I just happen to do some stuff for XYZ Corporation, when we get that and know that God's the one that's really behind my paycheck, it's a different attitude. It's a different mindset. When we understand that God is the one that's going to take care of me, my company may not take care of me, my friends may not take care of me, my family may not take care of me, but my God will. Folks, I love you. I'm sure, knowing Josh, as he's working here with you, that he loves you to death. But I'm going to let you in on a little secret. At some point, Josh and I are both prone to let you down. Why? Because we're imperfect. Not because we're bad guys. Because we love you and we want to try to do our best. But somewhere, sometime along the way, we're going to mess something up. It's because we mess stuff up. I'm not saying that just because Josh is a screw-up. Love Josh. But we're going to mess some stuff up. Now, in that letting you down because I didn't come through for you in the way that you thought I would or in the way that even I wanted to do, I'm imperfect. You know who's not? My God. My God's not going to ever let me down. His Son is never going to let me down. He's going to make sure, even if me or Josh mess something up, He's going to send somebody else or some other way to make sure that you're okay. And that's the beauty of serving a perfect God. That's why we don't elevate ministers or preachers or elders and put them on a pedestal and say they're perfect, because they're not. They're going to mess some stuff up. Two of the elders from Danville are here tonight. I love these men and love serving underneath them, and they are wonderful men. I'd put them with anybody. But I understand at some point they may let me down. They won't do it on purpose. They won't do it recklessly. But even when they do the best that they can, sometimes we mess stuff up. And we love each other in spite of that. But we also understand that when we're all following the same perfect God, there's a way to make it right. And there's a way to make it okay. But we have to understand that God is the supplier of our needs. So here's the other piece of that we need to get very, very clear. If God's the one that supplies our needs, who doesn't need to worry about my needs being taken care of? Me. Not to worry about that. That's not up to me. That's not on my list of powers, of duties, of responsibilities as God's trustee to make sure that I'm taken care of. Not on my list. What's on my list? Make sure God's things are taken care of. Now, to make sure God's things are taken care of, as His child, as a member of His body, what do I have to do? I got to take care of everybody else. Right? So if you think about that, attendance Sunday was 105, right? So if I, by myself, am trying to take care of me, how many people are trying to take care of me? One. If the body that's here is taking care of me, how many people, according to that board, are going to take care of me? 104, because we got to minus me back out, right? So, again, not to put too much math on you tonight, but which one's bigger? Which one puts us in a better set of circumstances? The 104, the body taking care of each other, or me trying to look out for number one? But here's the other part of that resource. Just like that pilot, remember in our story in the beginning, didn't look around and make sure he talked to the air traffic controller and make sure he read the weather report and make sure he looked at all the resources available to him. What did he do? He got in the plane and said, "I got this, boys." But he didn't. We as Christians sometimes fail this stewardship principle because we forget to look around. And when I say look around, we're so afraid of telling anybody among us that there's anything wrong with us that we never ask for help. I'm going to let you in on another little secret. We're all messed up. Every last one of us in here are messed up. Now, some of us hide it better than others, and we have, you know, bigger clothes that hide that stuff. But Josh will tell you the same thing. He's messed up. He's got issues. We all do. But what we've got to do is look around each other and tell each other that stuff. Hey, here's where I'm messed up. Here's where I need some help. And whether it's whatever stage of life you're in, if we look around the room, there's somebody that's already been there, isn't there? Josh and Tiffany are new parents. We got some people in here that have been parents for a long time, that have been parents to not only their kids, but now grandkids, right? So does it make sense that if you're a new parent, that you should probably ask somebody that's already been a parent how to do some stuff when you mess something up? How many of us as new parents, my son's in the back, he's 10, have messed some stuff up with our kids? I've messed a bunch of stuff up. You know what I do when I start messing that stuff up? I go grab somebody that's already had a 10-year-old and say, how do I fix this? Because I'm afraid I'm ruining my child. So what did you do when this happened? Because they've already been there. And then when you have teenagers, you go find somebody that's already been there. And when your kids leave home and you're empty nesters, you know what you do? You go find some older people that are already there and they've been through those pains and have been through those hurts and have been through those trials. And you are a good steward of that resource of God's family that He put there. And why is that? Remember, God supplies to the needs of the trustee. And how does He supply that need when we don't know what we're doing? All the rest of us, right? That's how God supplies that. Four. If you don't listen to anything else I say all weekend long, and if you've been asleep, somebody wake up the person next to them, this is the most important thing I can tell you. Our stewardship, our act as a trustee, as a fiduciary, as a power of attorney, is a direct reflection of the love and trust we have for the grantor. I'm going to say that one more time. Our actions as a steward, as a trustee, as a beneficiary, as a fiduciary, is a direct reflection on our love, our trust, and our faith in the grantor. When we mess this stuff up, what it means is that we don't have enough faith, enough trust, and enough love in the one that gave it to us. Because somewhere along the way, we've forgotten. We've forgotten that it's His. We've forgotten the cost that He gave us. Listen to 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 8 and 9. God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things, at all times, you may abound in every good work. As it is written, He has distributed freely, He has given to the poor, and His righteousness endures forever. So is there a limit on this? Nope. Is there a limit to how much God can give us and how much God loves us and how much God cares for us? No, it's limitless. Our failings, I'm convinced, in life and everything, are all faith issues. Our failings as a steward, our failings to look at the resources means that we don't appreciate them. Back up a little bit to the story I told about my car. You know why I beat the fire out of my car? It didn't cost me anything. Mom and Dad got me a car. And I beat it and did all kinds of bad things with it, wrecked it several times, all that stuff, right? I didn't take care of it. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't love it. And it was a direct reflection upon my appreciation for what was entrusted to me. I didn't appreciate it. Now, the first car that I saved up and spent my money, my sweat, my tears, my blood to get, that thing was never dirty. Because I appreciated it. Look at the things in your life that you appreciate, that you think the most of, and look at how much you care for them. It'll tell on yourself. You can tell me tonight, if we go around the room and say, what do you appreciate the most? What do you care about the most? You can say anything. Oh, I love my spouse. I love my kids. I love this or I love that. But I don't want you to say it. I want you to do a hard examination of your life and look at what you take care of. Look at what you spend the most time polishing and perfecting and cleaning. And if there was a loss or damage to it, how upset would you be? That's what you believe in. That's what you have faith in. That's what you have trust in. That's what you love. It's a direct reflection on that. We can say with all the lip service we want to, the things that we're supposed to say, but our lives tell on us. Our actions tell on our heart every single time. It's a direct reflection. Of this stewardship. This principle is the most important. The more that we love God, the more our faith and our trust and our dependence is upon God, the better we're going to do. How does Jesus explain it in John 14 and verse 15? If you love me, you will do my commandments. The order of that is very important. Jesus says if you do my commandments, you won't then love me. Now how it works. We can't work ourselves into salvation. We can't work ourselves into this. Well, Jesus, I did all this stuff. Don't you know I love you? Listen to what he said in Matthew, in the rebuke, right? When he cast those out to the right and to the left, and the group responds and says, Jesus, haven't we taught in your name? Haven't we cast out demons in your name? Haven't we done all these things? What's the answer? Apart from me, I never knew you. But Jesus, I did all this stuff. You didn't love me. Jesus says, if you love me, you'll do my commandments. Isn't that the same principle that James teaches in James chapter 2? About faith and works and the relationship thereof? He said, show me your faith without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works. It's better for us to keep our mouth shut and show what we believe than to yap all day long and give lip service about things that we don't trust in enough to do. Because the truth is, if I have faith, if I have trust, if I have love in God, then I'm going to trust that His way is the right way. I'm not going to try to do it my way. I'm going to try to do it God's way because I trust Him. Because I love Him. Because I know all the things that He's done for me. Therefore, I'm going to act as if I believe that. I'm not going to act in direct opposite of that as if I don't believe it. Isn't that what happens when you get bad advice? Anyone's ever got bad advice? You got bad advice? Somebody tells you, you know, hey, this is what you need to do. Right? The last several days at the bank with the lottery and the Powerball, it's up to this, and everybody's got advice about what you should do. All right, we should all pull our money in, and then we got, you know, $100 in the pot, and we'll all win the lottery, and then we can leave the bank. Right? It's been nothing but mindless chatter. And nobody wants to sit down and do the math that it's impossible and it's gambling and all that stuff. But that bad advice, you look at them, you see the bad advice, you say, you know what? I'm out on that. I'm out on that kind of advice. It's terrible advice. And we walk away from it. We walk away because we don't believe, right? But what happens when we get good advice and we follow it? What does that show? We trust the advice that's been given because it's good. So what does it say when God says, this is how I want you to build my church? And we don't. You know what we say? God, I don't trust. That's bad advice. I don't want to. We shouldn't build it that way. Here's a better way, God. Let's say, I don't trust you. I don't think that your way is the right way. I think my way is better. It's a faith issue. It means that I don't have trust, belief, love, confidence in what you're saying and what you're doing. Therefore, I'm going to go in a different direction. I have the same argument with my GPS all the time. Anyone ever do that? You plug into GPS and GPS says, here's the best way to get there. And you're like, no, it's not. Why would you go all the way down that road? That's out of the way. This is more direct. And we turn off the GPS. But the GPS is the computer and it's math and it's algorithms and it's... No, it's not. Here's real life experience. Here's how this works. Right? It's not that we don't think it's accurate information. We process it and we say either I trust it or I don't. Same thing when we look at the scriptures. When God says, here's the best way to do it. But God, you see, if we do all this other stuff, we'll be able to build a bigger kingdom and bring more people to you. If we'll just water down the gospel a little bit. If we just tell people you can stay in your sins and still be a Christian, everything will be fine. We'll have 10,000 people here. God, won't that be better? Number five. As with all fiduciaries, there will be a final accounting. My day job, what I do to Paul Made Tents, I make financial plans. I do estate planning and things that work to support my preaching habit. And as part of that, I manage trusts and assets for 501c3s, institutions, all that stuff. Every year, I sit down with a board of executives, with trustees, and we go through what we did last year. What did we do? How did we do? What was the benchmark that we were comparing that against? And how did we make decisions? Did we follow the investment policy statement? Did we have returns commensurate with the risk that we took for the benchmark? And we measure everything. And we sit down and we look at it line by line, position by position, dollar by dollar. In the same way, at the end of our lives, we're going to sit down with God. And God's going to lay out all the resources that He gave us. In the same way, when that plane went down, from our example when we started this lesson, the FAA conducted research. And they looked at the flight logs, and they looked at the plans, and they looked at the level of fuel, and they went line by line and said, why did this happen? Why did it fail? And there was an accounting. Jesus says it this way in Matthew 6, 19 through 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy and where neither thieves nor break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And at the end of our lives, when this is all over, we're going to sit down with God and He's going to say, how much of your soul did you devote to eternity? How much of your body did you devote to eternity? How much of the goods that I gave you did you devote to eternity? How much of your talents did you devote toward eternity? What was your asset allocation? And why? And these are just four basic principles, but it's going to go deeper than that. God's going to say, I gave you 4,622 hours of service for me. And here's how many you used. I gave you this many days. I gave you this many sermons. I gave you this many Wednesday night invitations. I gave you this many calls from the elders and chances to study with the preacher. I gave you all this, all these possessions. I gave you all of these resources. Why, oh why, did you squander them? Why didn't we meet the benchmark that I had for you? And as I said in the beginning, all of the possessions, all of the resources, all of what God has entrusted each and every one of us with is according to scope and ability. What that means is that every one of us has a different benchmark. That God says, Mike, here's where you should have performed. Remember, if you think about it, those of you that have little kids or can remember when you had little kids, they give you that growth chart. You know, where's your child at? Are they in the 50th percentile, the 99th percentile? They tell you kind of where they're ranking with everything else. I'm persuaded that God has that for my spiritual growth. He says, Mike, at this point in your life, given everything that I've placed in your hands, here's where you should be. Now, I may should be here. Josh should be over here. Somebody else should probably be right here. But God knows right where every one of us should be. And we're going to have this accounting. And God's going to say, here's your benchmark. Here's how it performed. Here's what you should have done. Here's what you actually did. And what it tells me is that you didn't love me enough to trust me to follow through on my plan. And there are going to be those, just like in Matthew that Jesus talked about, that are going to scream, but God, look at all the stuff I did. And I've been there. Full disclosure, I've had trusts that I managed that underperformed the benchmark. And I've been in those meetings with boards and trustees and said, yeah, but we did this and we did this and we did this well on this part and I'm trying to defend myself, but at the end of the day, it's, Mike, here's your measuring stick. You got this much time to get it right or we're going to go somewhere else. But at the end of our life, there is no more time. There is no more grace. there is no more opportunity to change. Because that vast component of stewardship that we're blessed with is time. And I don't know how much time He's allotted each and every one of you. We read the paper every day and know in our lives through our friends, lives that end at 15, at 19, at 30, at 45. I don't know when your life's going to end. I don't know how much time you got. And I don't know when your accounting review, your fiduciary review at the end of your life is going to come. But I do know the biggest part of time management is that old Latin phrase of carpe diem, to seize the day, seize the moment, seize the opportunity. There's a quote, and I don't remember necessarily where I read it now. It's one of the ones I love, and since I forgot where I got it, it's mine. That God doesn't care about your yesterday, He cares about your today and your tomorrow. That we can live in the past of what we've done or what we haven't done, and that'll kill us. We can't do anything about that. There's nothing I can do right now to change what I did yesterday or change what I did this morning. What I can do is I can get whole right now. And I can be whole moving forward. I can tonight take an opportunity to wash my sins away. I can take tonight to pray for repentance, to come clean with God, and tonight I can be clean. And that's part of that stewardship of time management. God says, here's the time that we've got in front of us. Here's what we can do. What will you do with it? We are entrusted with an abundance of riches from God. I could start talking tonight and talk for the next 30 years and never exhaust that list. If you don't believe that in your life, see me immediately afterwards and we'll have some serious conversations. God has blessed us all abundantly, far beyond what any of us deserve. Has entrusted us with a huge, huge blessing. Huge blessings, that's plural. And we are entrusted with these things to do His work. And we're going to talk about that with our souls and with our bodies and with our goods and with our talents. And where we focus our efforts and energy on each one of those things, whether they're directed for the use in the kingdom or for our own personal use. One of the worst things that I've seen happen in all of my career is those that are trustees of 501c3s of nonprofit organizations that bleed them dry. See, nonprofit doesn't mean no money. Nonprofit means that it's tax-free. They're not trying to make a profit. But that doesn't mean that they can't rake those coffers clean. There are watchdog websites out there where you can go on and let's say you want to give to the Humane Society. And they have to report where all their money goes. It has to be public record. And there are some that are so bad that out of every dollar you give, 4 or 5 cents goes to the root cause. So if we're talking about the Humane Society, if you give them a dollar, 4 cents goes to an animal. 4 cents. You know where the other 96 cents gets eaten up? Administrative expense. People got to get paid. When we look at our lives and the abundance of riches that God has entrusted us with, what percent of that's going to God? What percent of that are we keeping? Is God even getting a nickel on every dollar of blessings that He's given us? And I'm not talking about what you put in the plate when you pass it around. That's not what this is about. This is not about giving. This is not about tithing. It's not about any of that stuff. I'm talking about God has everything. Our entire lives belong to Him. What are we doing with that? What are we doing with that? Is it for work in the kingdom? Or have we taken and said, God, these blessings that You've entrusted me with, this wit, this knowledge, this wisdom, this quickness of understanding, you know what? I used that and I made XYZ Corporation a ton of money. I was the president or vice president or executive, and we set records and we had earnings and we did all this stuff. God's going to say, but I gave you that so that you could lead my people. I gave you that so you'd be involved in the kingdom. And while your corporation grew, your body didn't. The body of believers, the reason I put you there, didn't. I've often pondered this. What would great leaders of corporations, guys like Jack Welch, who led GE, what kind of elder do you think he'd make? What if Bill Gates and all the work and all he did with Microsoft and all that, what if he spent that same wit and wisdom in developing Bible software to make it easy for the masses and to boil down complicated texts and make it easy for people to read and to use and to access? What would the kingdom look like if the people that we look at around our nation, around the world, that have these great skills, that have done great physical things with, what if that work was applied to the kingdom? Because here's the thing. That's what it was meant for. Every ounce of blessing that we have was intended for our work in the kingdom, not our work in the world. How we use these riches as a trustee, fiduciary, steward will be accounted for in the end. Whatever we've done with them, there's going to be that accounting. And finally, as I said, the most important thing, and I'm going to say this a bunch over the next 3 days, it is a direct reflection about our love, our faith, our trust, our confidence in our God. That's what this is really about. It's not that we need to work harder or try harder. It's not that we need to read more. That's not what this is about. If our heart is in the right place, everything else is going to follow. If our heart's not in the right place, we're not going to be able to force it in. We're not going to get a square peg in a round hole. It's just not going to happen. And sometimes we try to do that. We spend too much time on the working out our own salvation and think, I just need to work harder. No, we don't. Get our heart right. Get our faith right. And follow the trust in God. If we'll do that, all the rest will take care of itself. Friends, tonight, as we've looked at these five stewardship principles, as we've looked at how important this concept of being God's power of attorney, being God's trustee is, I hope and pray that you'll think about this, that you'll go home, that you'll pray about it, that you'll meditate on it, that you'll look at your own life and say, of all that God has entrusted into my hands, what in the world am I doing with it? If we'll first be thankful and say, look, God, you have done great things for me. And then second, say, Lord, here am I, send me. It's time for me to do the work that you've laid out for me, to be steadfast, immovable, and abounding in the work. And third, pray, God, I trust you. Guide my steps, guide my hands, and take away my anxious heart. If we'll do those things, I think the principles that we're going to look at over the next couple of days will become abundantly clear in our lives. We'll be better, profitable children of the King, and the blessings will continue to abound. If you're not a child of God, though, best case scenario, you're just stealing. I'm just going to be blunt and be honest with you. God has given you so many things, and you're just taking. And when you take, and you take, and you take, and you don't give back, that's stealing. If you're not a child of God, the first step, as I've said multiple times tonight, and I'm going to say multiple times, is you got to trust God. That's the first thing. I got to trust Him. How do we trust Him? Let's find out about Him. Let's read and understand that He is the creator of the heavens and the earth, that He loved us so much that He gave His only begotten Son to die in our place, that innocent blood was shed for our sins, and God committed to us long before He ever asked us to commit to Him. Secondly, let go of all the other stuff. Let go of the anxiety, let go of the power, let go of the control, and say, God, I tried it this way and it didn't work. I need you. Confess that the only way to God is through Jesus. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. There is no access to the Father, but through the Son. And acknowledge the blessings of the Son and of forgiveness. And then die to this world. Die to the old man. In the waters of baptism, having all your sins washed away, rising to take hold of newness of life. And then as a new child of God, raising in thankful appreciation for the love that God has given us, and take those blessings and be the power of attorney that we ought to be. Say, God, my life's not about me, it's about you. The things that you've entrusted with me, these possessions, these souls, these bodies, these goods, these talents are for your benefit. And everything I do in my life is going to benefit you. And I know if I benefit you, you'll make sure I'm taken care of. Wherever you are tonight, be a good steward of the time that we have. If you're not a child of God, let's fix that tonight. If you are a child of God, but you've gotten lost in this idea of what we ought to be as God's fiduciary, let's talk about it. Let's pray about it. If you need to make public confession of sins, or you just need encouragement, you just need help, wherever you are, whatever we can do, don't walk out this door with any doubt, with any guilt, with any shame, but come forward as we stand and as we sing.